Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on the issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
So welcome to today's episode of New Cyber Frontier. On today, we're going to be talking with the director of Coalfire's Cyber Risk Advisory Service. And that is Abel Sussman, who has a couple credentials, a PMP, CISSP, and CIRSC. So Abel, welcome today. How are you doing?
Hello. Thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure.
Well, definitely. It's a pleasure having you. I always look for some, people coming in from staple companies in the cyber industry to tell us about, what they do. And so people get abreast. We're used to seeing these names everywhere. And so often we're like, well, what does that company do? And this is a good opportunity to kind of do that. So tell us, first of all, about yourself. And then secondly, about Coalfire.
I would love to. So I am a project manager that has been involved in reviewing and developing federal IT systems for the past 18 years. These can be specific niche products, software that's installed to help the federal government execute services for citizens, other programs that help do the back-end office management of various federal offices. And I've been lucky enough to see the transition from federal standalone systems to more cloud-based systems and implementing the appropriate cybersecurity requirements on top of that to make certain that national assets are protected.
Okay.
A little bit about...
And Coalfire, then.
Coalfire.
Yeah. Go ahead.
A little bit about Coalfire. So Coalfire provides cyber risk management and compliance services for enterprises and government organizations. We work across several different compliance frameworks, such as for payments, international organization for standardization, healthcare, system and organizational controls, and more recently in FedRAMP.
Okay.
We help clients understand their cyber risk. We test against real-world threats. We assess cloud service providers' capabilities, and we help engineer solutions.
Okay. So it sounds like Coalfire has a pretty big gamut, mostly consulting, though, and compliance. Do you guys offer any solutions or products that you sell in the cyber arena?
We do not sell any products. Our services are really to help firms understand where they are in terms of cyber risk and where they need to be. And being vendor neutral really helps us in this regard.
Yeah, definitely. So we're going to talk, and today I brought you on to talk about some of these compliances, and especially FedRAMP, which is kind of the direction for the new cloud compliance, and we'll get into that. But I was interested in the CIRSC credential you hold. Can you explain, because I always have students asking me, which credential should I get? Can you explain what that one is and what having that has done for your professional career?
Absolutely. So CRISC stands for the Certified in Risk and Information Systems Control. It's a certification designed for IT professionals who have hands-on experience with risk identification, assessment, evaluation, response, and monitoring of IT systems. And this cert for me really helped my understanding of the auditing process and how evidence is gathered in order to determine if a system is meeting the compliance framework requirements.
Okay.
Now, since you did mention students, I'd like to bring something up. For if students are interested in Coalfire, if you're a graduate and you're wondering how to come into a cybersecurity firm, I would strongly suggest going for your Security Plus. Now, this is a base level certification. Students who have a 4-year degree would certainly know the background. They would have a great understanding of the security concepts. And with a little bit of studying on their own, I'm sure they could ace the exam. This shows that you're committed to security as a career.
Absolutely. Well, thanks. Let's be back. We'll come back in a minute after we hear from our sponsors.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
All right, welcome back. We are talking with Abel Sussman today, and we're getting into some compliance and some definitions of cloud, network, physical, different things. But Abel, we wanted to give us a background on kind of the progression of compliance. We're going to talk a lot about FedRAMP, which is, you know, cloud, but there's also some other ones. DICAP was a big military one. And then risk management framework we've heard coming up from DICAP is transitioning. FedRAMP. Give us a little bit of a history on what you've seen and what you've been doing as your career has gone through the compliance industry.
I'd love to. So I think it is important for the audience to understand a little bit about how government works. There's an organization called the National Institute of Standards and Technology, or NIST. And this group creates the framework of how to assess federal IT systems. It started in standalone systems, and this is where your earlier frameworks such as DICAP, which was for the defense area, RMS, Risk Management Framework, were all developed by that group. As the technology needs of the federal government grew, that is where they started to add cloud-based cybersecurity requirements on top of what was already established.
Okay. So as far as your area, you focus a lot in FedRAMP. So talk about FedRAMP, what that is, and what it means for what you do.
FedRAMP is the Federal Risk and Authorization Management Program. It is a government-wide program that provides a standardized approach to security assessments, authorizations, and continuous monitoring for cloud products and services. FedRAMP has its origins in the federal Cloud First policy, which was a policy implemented for all federal agencies to now consider cloud-based solutions for new procurement. This is especially timely given that the current administration is pushing IT modernization across the federal department. So many of the systems that were developed independently or maintained separately are now moving towards the cloud for greater efficiencies.
Okay. So the question, and we've heard this over the last couple of years, with security in the cloud. Is the cloud, I mean, just your opinion, what's your thoughts, is the cloud and what the government's moving towards in the cloud, is that better from a security point than managing their own systems, keeping it on their own networks and servers? What are your thoughts in that area?
Here is a very interesting question. Generally, the cloud is very secure, but nothing is a one-size-fits-all approach. There are many different levels of security based on the type of assets that you want to protect, and also how much freedom you want to give your users. And in that spectrum, there are certain security controls that are very applicable and ones that are not. You want to design a system that has the appropriate balance between security and usability of the overall program. The more secure you get something, the tighter controls are needed. And generally, this is a very positive step for the federal government because they can now have a baseline to standardize and secure everything from websites to critical national security data.
Yeah. Well, what do you think about the, and I've heard this said that right now people don't understand the cloud. People aren't trying to hack into it. They're not, there isn't really an attack metric yet, or, you know, just people going after it as much. At some point, people are going to start understanding. Attack vectors are going to come up for the cloud. What happens when that starts to occur? Do you think we've gone down this direction of now everything is in the cloud? What do we do if attacks start to become prevalent in the cloud? What's your thoughts?
Oh, attacks are there and ongoing right now. And the cloud service providers are implementing layers of security. So they're not only protecting their applications, they're protecting the networks that they reside in, the infrastructure that that resides in, with a host of different tools. This is really just the world that we're living in now and will be for the next decade or so. You will see, I think, security becoming more and more ubiquitous and more in the background. So we understand that people are perhaps the weakest link if they give away their passwords and so forth, but there are going to be a host of different tools that monitor system usage to make certain that people are operating the right way, not doing any suspicious activity. You're going to see other types of tools that are happening in the background that do alerts to system administrators should something be spilled or data is now being accessed that shouldn't be or an attempt. So these are more and more advanced features, and you could really make them like akin to driving a car, right? Previously, you didn't have automatic steering or automatic brakes. Everything was manual. More and more of those are getting automated in order to help the driver proceed safely. More and more security controls are being implemented to make certain that the systems operate in a safe and secure manner.
Yep. Let me kind of challenge that, just playing devil's advocate here, using the same car analogy. Now you are, at this point, you buy a car. The brakes, you push the pedal. The brakes are controlled actually by a computer. The steering is controlled by a computer. The acceleration is controlled by a computer. What happens, for instance, we'll just use the car still. If somebody hacks into said computer, now they're in control of everything. Have we done that with the cloud where we've just pushed all the things off under this layer of convenience that then when somebody gets in, wow, the problem's even bigger?
Well, to extend your analogy further, if your car is stolen, someone has complete control of your car no matter what. What we are trying to do is institute a series of controls that won't happen. So, again, in our car analogy, you know, did the person use the right key on the way in? Are they driving a route that's expected? Is it 3 a.m. and that's an unregular time for operating a vehicle? So, on one hand, yes, I understand that people feel like they're losing control when they move to the cloud, right? They don't have the data on site. They can't walk into a server and point to, there it is.
Mm-hmm.
However, it is, in fact, those very same constraints that earlier allowed more malfeasance to take place because you could have systems that were insecure operated. You couldn't have new elements quickly propagated to all applications.
Okay, well, fair enough. I think there's definitely a, I'm just accenting a known discussion on that topic, but let's take a break right now. We'll be back after we hear from our sponsors.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Over 3 million data breaches happen every single day. That's over 2,000 records being compromised every minute. So often, we focus on securing web data access. But what if the attackers are already inside, having gained direct access to your storage through data management software? When it comes to communications that go directly into your storage devices, make SNIA your first line of protection. SNIA's conformance testing limits outdated communications that are known to be used by attackers. It works continuously behind the background to make sure your storage is protected. To find out if your data is truly secure, visit our website at www.snia.org/cybertest.
So welcome back. We're talking to Abel Sussman about FedRAMP assessments and FedRAMP, the requirements for FedRAMP. And Abel, I wanted to know, you know, what does it take? You know, we have these requirements for cloud. Obviously, some company has to come in and verify that somebody meets this compliance for FedRAMP. Who is able to do that?
Thanks for that question. So the organization that can perform that service, they can review a cloud solution and see if it's fit to operate in federal space, is called a third-party assessment organization, or 3PAO. And that's what Coldfire is.
Okay.
A 3PAO has authority from the FedRAMP Project Management Office to conduct assessment. And to be a 3PAO, you have to demonstrate knowledge of federal cybersecurity requirements, ability to perform testing, including penetration testing, and do repeatable examination steps. Now, just to toot our own horn, Coldfire has performed hundreds of assessment and advisory engagements within FedRAMP. We've done the most FedRAMP work of any 3PAO, and I'm really glad to be able to take the opportunity and share with your audience some of our findings.
Okay. So that's your bread and butter. If somebody says, I want to get have a new application in the cloud, Coldfire is the company to call to say, come and do this, making sure we meet the requirements to be able to be utilized by the government for their programs.
Absolutely correct.
Okay. All right. So what is it? How you said you've gone through a certain number of these, hundreds or whatever. What is the process? What do you do if somebody engages you, or how would somebody, I guess to start with, how would somebody know they need to give you a call or have this assessment done? When do they start the process of knowing they need to be in FedRAMP?
Absolutely. So a lot of our clients already have commercially viable products that they're trying to bring into the federal government. They could be responding to a request for proposal. They could be a prime and working with a contracting officer from the Fed, or they could be a subcontractor to one of the many federal IT players. In the contract itself, the IT system will state that it needs to go through FedRAMP either before it is procured or shortly thereafter. And that's when people can come to Coldfire. We can help advise you on how to meet federal cybersecurity requirements, or do the assessment to make certain that it is there and provide a report to the federal government for them to issue an ATO, authority to operate.
Okay, so I think I'm getting the understanding now. This isn't a common, you know, we're developing a solution that needs to be certified FedRAMP. These companies have a solution, and now, you know, they want to migrate into a bigger market. They want the federal government to use it for different things, and they engage with FedRAMP to make sure, hey, here's some things we need to do to meet. What kind of things fall in that list? What do you normally see that you have to tell them they need to change before they can meet FedRAMP?
Sure. So I do want to back up and just add on one thing. So
sure.
Sometimes people already have a solution and they want to federalize it. Sometimes they're developing a solution.
Okay.
You know, as you and I both know that it's best to bring in security in the beginning as you develop outwards. So knowing your requirements ahead of time is always beneficial. That said, as you work towards FedRAMP, you know, here are some things that you really need to keep in mind. You will need to develop what's called a system security plan. This provides an overview of your solution and how you meet each of the security requirements. It's called a description of your security controls, along with the responsibilities of all individuals with access, so all of your privileged users and the different types of privileged users.
Mm-hmm.
The documentation here can be fairly substantial. FedRAMP SSPs starts off as a 300-page template and can easily exceed 800 pages once it's completed.
Wow. So what's the most common mistake or common thing you see that people could have addressed before they started the process to be further down the road?
Yeah, so from our research, we've identified a few top areas where we find some common problems. And in no particular order, generally, firms have to make certain that physical and logical access restrictions must be defined and documented. This is access restrictions, and if you go into that misdocumentation earlier, it's called CN5.
Mm-hmm.
Another one, and these are individual security controls I'm going to talk about, is the System Development Lifecycle, or SA3. This is a strong development strategy incorporating information security at every step. What we want to make certain is that you're just not ad hoc developing things and putting them into production. Okay. Are you following an agile process? Are you following a different type of process where there are tools used for planning, creating, testing, and deploying parts of your information system? You want to make certain also that no one person can implement a change and then deploy it to production, that there is a check on that for obvious security reasons.
Okay.
You also want to implement information system monitoring, SI4. So we want to make certain that there is a security information and event management tool, SIEM tool, there are many that are out there, and this provides a real-time analysis and security alerts. And then the last one is that the firm has a general security awareness, AT2. This is the basic security awareness training for all users and all developers. They understand the concepts of how to maintain security and respond to security incidents.
So this is, everything I'm hearing, or most of it, is about, this is a checks on the firm. Do they have the organization process to be able to prove that they're meeting security needs for FedRAMP? That's what I'm hearing?
Yes, not only meet security needs, but also with incident reporting. Should something happen, that they have a defined process and policy on how to investigate,
mm-hmm,
and report on security incidents on an ongoing basis.
Okay, understood. So now everything I'm hearing as well talks to me, it says big company. This is behemoth companies that get involved with this type of process. How could a small or mid-sized business, or do you have those being involved in this process?
Yeah, so that's a great question. It sounds like it's a monolithic task, but as of today, so we're talking on September 6th,
mm-hmm,
there are 88 authorized solutions and 65 in the process right now for getting their FedRAMP accreditations. So this spans a gambit of services. You have large infrastructure providers like Amazon, Web Services, IBM, cloud management services, Microsoft Azure, the platform providers, Salesforce, Oracle, Datapipe, software providers such as Adobe, Cisco, Box. I gave you major names, but it's important to know that almost 40% of all FedRAMP services come from smaller firms. These are firms that have less than $100 million in revenue, or you can even take it a step, an order of magnitude down, 14% of FedRAMP-approved services are from firms that have less than $10 million of revenue. It's easy to talk about the big names because everyone immediately understands them. Mm-hmm. But a lot of federal applications come from niche players. They offer a specific solution that is well-defined in the marketplace and has had some commercial success.
Okay, so if I were a startup, let's say 5-10 people, and we're making an app and we're like, wow, this really could be utilized for the government. Do you have any, or have you helped any that size go through this process?
Yes, we have. And it's great working with such entrepreneurial firms that are flexible and can rapidly implement changes. You know, here is the difference that I've noticed in some of the small versus larger firms. Larger firms, you want a piece of paper. Hey, they've got reams of it to describe everything that the system is doing. But to implement the change can take a very long time. Smaller firms, they tend to outsource all that documentation, but when a new requirement is needed, they can quickly develop and implement it to make certain that they are technically satisfying all the requirements.
Okay. So now, you know, I was just thinking as we're talking about all the processes, steps, small companies, what would it cost? I mean, if I'm a small company or a big company, it doesn't matter. We're just going to eat that cost. But if I'm a small, like that startup, or even maybe even just a little bit bigger, what type of a cost investment do I have here? What am I going to go through with this whole process?
I'm glad you'd asked that question. That's almost the first one that we hear right after, what is FedRAMP? How much does it cost?
Yeah.
So the answer here really depends on the CSP and service, right? infrastructure costs are going to be very different from software as a solution type of cost. And hyperscale solutions at the Google level and higher are going to be very unique implementations. Generally, for a firm, there are three types of costs. There's building your solution, so that, you know, that's your own IT development, investment, and execution. There's the cost for preparation, so this is your documentation. You can develop that in-house if you have technical writers that are familiar with compliance. If not, you can outsource that. And then there's the assessment itself. That's having a third party come in and do the required testing. Generally, for most of the applications that have gone through FedRAMP, the average cost is less than $250,000.
Wow. How long can we expect that to take, this whole process end to end?
Well, we have some historical trends on that. So in 2014, it took on average about 18 months to go through a FedRAMP assessment. Mm-hmm. If you went through the JAB, which is the Joint Authorization Board, or if you went through an agency, individual agencies could do it a little faster at 14 months. But now that we've had some experience and more firms have gone through FedRAMP, we've built up a knowledge base. There's some more standardization as to how assessments are done. And generally, more firms are prepared. So okay. Now it takes, on average, about 6 months to get through.
Uh-huh. So you'd recommend that this is done during the design phase. Let's say you have a new application. You're not sure if it can be used for government purposes, but you have, you know, some investment to put into it. Is it beneficial to just go ahead and get this anyway?
I would say so. First, it's always more cost effective to put in the requirements during the build phase than to bolt them on later.
Yeah.
But also, many of the requirements that we're bringing in right now are, I would call, housekeeping. These are industry best practices. You'll want to move in this direction if you are concerned about protecting your data.
Okay. You had mentioned something. I think JAB, Joint Industry Whatever Board. I talked to you about this before, and we kind of missed this earlier on, where this is the actual approval by the military. Is that correct?
So let me give you a little bit of update as to who the major player is.
Okay.
The JAB, the Joint Authorization Board, consists of members from the Department of Defense, Department of Homeland Security, and General Services Administration. Not many people know that last one. That's the purchasing arm of the federal government.
Okay.
They have experts that come together to establish the security requirements of FedRAMP, working with the FedRAMP's Project Management Office, as well as review packages, FedRAMP packages, that come in. When a firm goes through FedRAMP, they generally have two choices. They could be working individually with a federal agency, specifically like the Department of State, the Department of Interior, and so on. Or they, if they don't have a sponsor, they can request for the JAB to review their application and grant them the ATO independently, then they can proceed to sell out to the federal government from there.
Okay, so if you are a consumer off-the-shelf product, you would go through the JAB to get that certified so that it could then be a government off-the-shelf product.
It really depends on your acquisition strategy. Some firms come into federal government because they've gotten requests from an agency to participate, or they think that they have met a need for an upcoming procurement, and so they can work one-on-one with an agency. But if you're just interested in entering federal space in general and don't have that support, you can work with the JAB.
Okay, interesting. All right, so kind of in closing here, we wanted to let you put out the word for how somebody engages with you. What types of clients are you looking for, and how would they get in contact with you?
So if anybody is working with the government on systems and they're trying to make sure that they are going to be able to operate in federal space, you need to give us a call. It may not be FedRAMP. It could be one of the other compliance frameworks, but certainly this is a good starting point. And the best way to reach Coalfire is to write an email to the number 3, PAO, Third Party Assessment Organization, 3PAO, at coalfire.com.
All right, and your website is just coalfire.com?
Yes.
Okay. Well, there you go. Thanks a lot for joining today, Abel. This is some great information. I'm thinking that it is a targeted audience, but sooner or later, I mean, I was always curious about what FedRAMP was, and this has really helped me. So I know it will be a help to a lot of our listeners as well. But thanks for joining today, Abel.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
The views or opinions expressed by me during this podcast are my own and are not those of my employer, Colorado Technical University.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember to get involved. Often we think that someone else will handle privacy and security in the virtual world, but you are the only one truly in command of your virtual fate. Join our mailing list so we can keep you informed of breaking news and new releases. If you have an idea, if you have a question that you would like to hear answered, or if you want to get involved with our efforts, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links, as they are the ones that really make this show possible. I want to thank each of you for supporting the show, and we look forward to seeing you back for the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.